Do you see a future where Google will be just chat?
Absolutely. Google will be more of a transactional engine.
Craig Campbell is an SEO expert with 22 years of experience who gained 1 million YouTube subscribers within just 3 years.
He is an expert in SEO and digital marketing.
That is where you need to manipulate the traffic that goes to your website. So you need to use social media, need to use anything you can to nudge that guy off the top slot. And we call that click-through rate manipulation. A lot of people will not tell you that's what they're doing, but you have to be driving traffic from multiple sources. That is what Google wants. That's called search generative experience. So that first answer is pulled from somewhere that Google trusts. However, can that be manipulated? Absolutely. They're always trying to fight ways to throw off the detection, but Google hates it. I've tried it. We built a website that had 1,000 pages on it, and we got amazing growth. Mm-hmm. And then it came to an update, and boom, dead. Once you get slammed by Google, you basically get a black pen right through your name. You know, from an SEO perspective, does podcasting actually do anything for your SEO?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Podfiles. My name is Bogdan Bratis, your host. And today I have a special guest, and we're going to talk about a lot of business stuff, SEO, marketing, and like his YouTube channel says, knowledge bombs that will make you money. So I have here Craig Campbell, who is based in Glasgow. He has been in the industry for 22 years, which is a long time. He's literally from 2003, if my math is right. And the internet was just getting started to be a thing. He also has a million subscribers on YouTube. He's running a successful SEO agency. And he is also a speaker and a marketing guru. So, how did you get into marketing space?
It's basically just timing. Like you said, the internet was just coming out. So I left school 1997 or 98, can't remember. It was one of those years, and a few dead-end jobs. But just when I was leaving school, the internet had just come out. Well, certainly in my house, it just came out. You know, you had the old dial-up connection, which you're probably too young to remember, but it came out and we were able to talk to girls online on MSN Messenger. So when I grew up...
I remember MSN Messenger.
So when I grew up, if we wanted to talk to a girl, for example, you know, you'd be like, you get your friend to ask her, you know, do you want to, you know, go out on a date with this guy or whatever it was. Like, there was no phones. No. There was no hiding behind anyone apart from your friend. So like talking on MSN, you're just like, fuck, you know, this is opens up a whole new world. Around about that time, I became obsessed with just what the internet was. It was like a life-changing thing that came into your house. So you're doing research, you're looking at your house on Google Earth, you're chatting to girls and stuff like that. And, you know, as a 17 or 18-year-old, that was just amazing.
Yep.
But I had a few dead-end jobs, didn't really know where I wanted to go in life. And I'd done those jobs, call centre and various other bits and bobs, but I was always drawn to the internet. So I very quickly thought, there's got to be a way to do something here. Mm-hmm. And I started out as a really bad web designer back then, you know, because websites were just coming out and stuff. So I thought, fuck it. You know, I'm going to give this a bash.
Freelancing.
Just at home, just playing around. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, I can throw a website together. Then you had someone else asking for a website and someone else and someone else. And before you knew it, you become a web designer on like a side hustle whilst having these crappy jobs. But very quickly, I was able to make more than I was in the crappy jobs. So I'm like, I'm just going to do this shit.
Of course.
Full time. But in hindsight, you know, I was looking at the websites and I'm like, you know, they were ropey, very ropey.
I mean, that era, he has a particular name. I'm not sure how is he called. I mean, everything looked a bit
really
weird.
Bad.
90s like, and web 1.0 or something.
Dude,
like,
I'd been learning HTML and I was able to have like scrolling text going along the top of the page, which you look at that now and you'd be like, Jesus Christ, that's terrible.
That? But
like red scrolling text.
And no like, themes, I would say, like no WordPress themes.
Oh, no,
or something.
WordPress
like,
wasn't even a fucking thing.
Yeah, so you would raw code it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was old HTML and you used something called Dreamweaver. So anyone listening from back in that era will be like, fuck, Dreamweaver. Really, it was really bad, but I did realise that I wasn't very good at it. You know, graphics and stuff were not my thing. And I found out about marketing, how could we market websites, which seemed to be easier, and kind of dived into that. And that's it. You know, that it was just pure luck, pure timing, and you know, blagging my way around. And, you know, one person said to another and said to another, and before I knew it, I had to then get staff. And here I am. All these years later, I kind of figured out the marketing side of it a lot better, and I don't even touch websites now. So
one of the things that I'm really interested, because you've been into this for so long, how do you feel things change over the years? Because I think they change quite a lot. I was born in 96, so I started getting into the internet space when I was like, well, 11, 12 or something. So that was like 2010, 2012, when Facebook started to kick in. And even since then, it changed quite a bit. But what's your take on that?
I mean, it always evolves. You've just got to keep up with what's going on. You know, back in the day, it was HTML websites. There wasn't a whole lot else going on. You then started to have Bebo and stuff coming out. But even you know, where I was learning, it was on forums. There was no YouTube. There was no video tutorials. Yeah. You know, I had to read like books and go on to forums. So the opportunity to learn gets better because you've got a lot more visual stuff now. But Facebook comes out. You know, Bebo came out first. Then you had Facebook. Mm. You've now got TikTok, you've got YouTube, you've got all of these other platforms. So things evolve all the time. You know, AI's now out. You can even, you know, have AI people, personas, and stuff like that. So it's always changing and always has done. You know, everything every year just gets better and better and better. Mm-hmm. However, it's slightly more technical, it's slightly more advanced. But if you're on that, you know, it's adapting year on year. You know, that's how I'm probably a really good all-rounder now, because I've been through every step of the way. You know, but for someone new coming in, there's just, it can be mind-blowing trying to figure out what's new, what's not, what's hot, what's not. You know, it's just an absolute minefield now. So it's just trying to keep up with what's working, what platforms are the best and stuff like that as well. And it also is very niche dependent. So there's a lot of platforms out there that I've never done so well on, like Pinterest.
Yeah. You
know, Pinterest might work well for maybe even someone like yourself, like a musician or you know, more visual stuff. But see, for SEO, it's garbage. You know, I've got people going, I get a million hits a month from Pinterest. And you're like, how? Like, how is that even possible? And I've seen it. They're
it's
not
a very
lying.
Niche platform.
You know, I've got a private mastermind as well, and there's a guy in there, and he is in the, believe it or not, the hair and nails industry. That's his thing. You know, he's just a guy, but you know, his wife actually done a lot of it. But Pinterest is the sole place where he gets all of his traffic, and you're like, oh my fucking God, can you teach me this? And he's like, I don't even know what I've done. You're like, Jesus. And I've tried, I've done courses on Pinterest, I've done everything, and I cannot get that to work. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a niche thing. Like, SEO people are not interested in looking at a picture of SEO.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe, you know, if you're in the music industry, people want band pictures, gig pictures,
studios, you know,
all of that
equipment,
stuff.
Equipment, whatever.
Yeah. Like. So I think it depends on what niche you're in, where to go as well. Mm-hmm. And again, experience, you've just got to try and use your experience.
Yeah, test it a bit.
You could go down a rabbit hole and spend a lot of time doing something and it doesn't actually do that well. So you spent a year trying to do Pinterest as an SEO guy and you're going to go,
you definitely need to focus into the things that work. Don't try to like go after everything, because I don't think that's a good strategy. So for example, for some people, probably like SEO, having a website doesn't work for whatever reason. Maybe just social media works for them or stuff.
Absolutely.
You know?
Even now, I reckon I could shut my website down tomorrow. You know, between YouTube and social media, I think I would do well, because I'm doing a lot of content and have done a lot of content for years. So that can work. You don't always have to solely rely on a website anymore. So that's a great thing. You know, you just got to follow where the traffic's at, get exposure. So
So what do you do every morning? How do you get so much done?
A team. So
you wake up early, or like, are you late?
No. I get up maybe about 9 o'clock.
Same as,
so
I do.
I don't get into the office until 10. But I've got a team. So a lot of people say, Craig, how do you do all of this stuff? And it's where, you know, I've got a studio. I can go in, I can crank out a video. It then goes to my video editor who will do all the editing. They'll pull out reels and everything else and post them for me. So whilst it looks like I'm fairly active, and I am active, I'm not saying I don't work, but it's nowhere near as what you know, what people would think. And you know, when I started out in business, I wanted to do everything myself. I wanted to be the person that done everything. So I wasn't quite doing that, YouTube.
That's
and stuff.
The thing that's going to destroy you.
So I wasn't doing videos, but for example, I would be wanting to record, I would be wanting to be on it, I would want to edit, I would want to post. There's not enough hours in the day to do that. And, you know, delegation is key. And I think one of my first agencies, that was the reason that I struggled to scale, is because I was a bit of a control freak. Not by, it was my first business. I didn't know any better.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, it's my business. So I'm not, you know, going to trust you to do stuff.
It was quite hard for my own business to actually transition from a freelance mindset to a business mindset. Because I started on Upwork, know, Upwork. Yeah. So I started like providing my services there. And then at some point I said, I can't do anymore because it's so much work. And actually I started like having pains on my hands, editing so much and my back would hurt. And I said, I just need to start hiring people to help me out. And it was so hard to give work away to these people and trust that they're going to do only 80, 90% because you can't say that. Everybody needs to be like you. You can't copy yourself.
This is the thing. You are a perfectionist. And I actually had this conversation with a guy who does my headshots. He took all my headshots in the studio. And he said, it's going to be about 2 weeks before I can get your headshots to you. I said, how? And he says, I've got to edit them. And I went, do you not outsource that part?
Yeah.
He's like, no. He says, I've tried and I don't trust people. They don't do it exactly the same way. And I had this very conversation with him. I'm like, dude, no one's ever going to do it to your stupid perfect standard. But they'll be able to do it 80, 90%. And you should be spending more time doing what you're good at, taking the pictures and, you know, you've got the studio. Fill that thing up. You shouldn't be sitting half of the time or three quarters of the time editing. That has got to be delegated out. There's guys out there who can do it.
There's a technician's mindset. Because I read a book, it's called the E-Myth. And in that book, you've got like a baker that is trying to do everything herself. She has a baking business and she makes the bread and she is taking care of the customers. She is doing so many things like supplies and everything. And she realized that I can't do this for very long and I can't scale it. And this guy came in and he started like, no, you need to start building systems around your business. Make sure that whoever you have around, they know exactly how they need to do it, when they need to do it, where. So answer these questions for them so they're not like roaming around your business doing nothing or like don't have an aim. So you definitely need these structures to make sure that the business works into one direction. If you don't have that and you start like picking their work every time, then you burn yourself out. Everybody else in the business, they are burned out themselves or at least like not satisfied because they don't feel like they're contributing anything meaningful to your business and the business fails. So it's not good.
Nah, like you say, systems, processes are the two big, big things that where I see a lot of failure. So, absolutely.
Amazing. So, let's get a little bit into the SEO stuff. So, I've seen loads of stories and loads of people talk about AI and stuff. You see, now I go on Google and I can search something and then I get an AI response right away.
Yep.
What's your take on that? What is Google doing now with AI?
Obviously, Google's got a lot of information out there, and you know that's called search generative experience. So that first answer is pulled from somewhere that Google trusts, and Google want to give that answer. They're basically taking all of the knowledge that everyone's put on it and taking first slot, which is a little bit unfair. However, can that be manipulated? Absolutely.
You know, that's the thing.
You know, if you Google something like top or best SEO speakers UK, that answer is me and probably six or seven different friends that are up there. So we were trying to figure out how do we feed into AI.
How did you do that?
You know, you've got to be on track. So AI, if you look at, there's an AI tool out there, what's the name? Perplexity. Now, it will show you the sources of where the information is pulled from. So then you say, I'm going to put this information on that source to see if my shit will pull through. So we do a lot of testing in the SEO space. And so me and a few friends were like, we'll do this, we'll do that. We'll put that out. But AI at the moment, or I think it's Claude, only goes up until April 2024.
Mm-hmm.
It's March and April 2024. They don't have information after
up to
that.
Date, yeah.
So it's only up to then. So you have to kind of preempt, if you're going to try and manipulate AI, you have to have done that a while back for it to pull through. Because hopefully, you know, AI will be able to pull through stuff in real time. But at the moment, it's like 6 months behind, if that makes sense. So we've done a lot of testing. We're like, we know this AI is not going away.
So if I try to manipulate AI, right, it would take around 6 months for your results to kick in because they have to take the new data in order for that to happen, right?
Yeah, and they've obviously got their own process in there where they might even change the trusted sources. So you're not even sure if that's actually going to work. So we've just thrown enough at the wall to see what sticks. But the trusted sources could change all of the time because Google are aware that people like me are trying to manipulate the information that's out there. And that's where things can become very dangerous because you don't know if you can trust what you read on the internet.
Yeah.
Because is it manipulated? You know,
you don't know who actually fed AI with that, right? You don't know where the information is coming from, which is, if you don't use like the tool you mentioned,
you
don't really know where that information is coming from many times, or you don't do
whether
enough
it's
research.
Accurate or not. So, you know, and obviously AI at the moment, it's not perfect. You know, it's great, but does it give out misinformation? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even for myself, I went into ChatGPT and I was just asking it a few questions about me to see what it would say. And I said, you know, does Craig have a son? Because I've mentioned my son in different interviews whatnot. And it said, yeah, he's got a son called Tyler, which isn't my son's name. My son's name's Charlie. And I'm like, is his son not called Charlie? And ChatGPT's like, oh, yeah, it is. So it's not wholly accurate.
Right.
Sometimes it can spit out
of course
some wrong stuff. So that's the danger that you have currently with ChatGPT. But it's going to get better. It is going to get more accurate. Mm-hmm. But it's the beginning, and that's where.
Do you see a future where Google will be just literally chat?
Absolutely. I think I was at a conference a couple of weeks back in Milan, and one of the guys there was saying, like, I see Google will be more of a transactional engine.
Uh-huh.
Information will come from ChatGPT or various other, you know, Google's generative experience and stuff, and the transactions and stuff will, if someone searches for a transactional search term, that will throw up
which in a way it's kind of good because obviously you know that everybody that will go on Google will look forward to buy, you know, and this way more business gets done.
But this guy Arnaud, his name is, he was saying, like, Amazon, if you go to Amazon, it's purely transactional.
Yeah,
that's it. You know, the 99% people are not on there looking for information. They just go, I want a watch, I want a, you know, shirt, or I want a light, or whatever it may be. And for him, in his opinion, he sees Google going like that. And I certainly wouldn't disagree with that. You know, information-wise, Google are here to make money. You know, that's why paid ads are, you know, getting prominent space and everything else. They don't really want us.
And the amount of ads started to, like, climb up and up in the last few years.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you go through a page full of ads, almost like half a page, let's say, and then you start getting to the first result, which kind of like gives me the insight that, you know, people start paying more Google for ad space, and kind of like something is like a shortcut to get out there, and maybe SEO could be one of the things that you can work on organically.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long-term strategy. But I've got this question where, let's say I start a business right now, right? And I want to get traffic on my website.
Yeah.
What would be the way to do it? Because obviously there's no organic growth just yet. No backlinks, nothing. Like keywords, nothing like that.
I mean, SEO is going to take you months to get where you need to be. You know, if budget allows, and you said to me, Craig, I've got X amount of money, I want to market my business, you can get instant traffic from Google Ads, Facebook Ads, TikTok Ads even. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of places where you could get instant traffic and mm-hmm. instant sales right now. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, when you do that, you're getting the cash flow coming in where you can afford to do SEO and whatever else, you know, organic social media and everything else to build up your brand and you know, capture traffic from a wide range of sources. It's not just SEO. Whereas years ago, people solely focused on just SEO. But with everything else coming out there, organic search getting pushed further down, more and more people are inclined to do
that. One of the things with organic SEO is like, it's very unpredictable because they can change the rules every time.
Yes and no. You know, they do change the rules, but it's not they change the rules. They slap websites that are doing something they shouldn't be doing.
Uh-huh.
So you don't see Google, you know, pulling the rug from under your feet if you're doing legit SEO. If you're doing anything that's
kind of
sketchy.
Is it okay to post directly from AI to like, what are the downsides?
So the problem, if you grab something from AI, and I've tried this purely from that, you know, Google can detect, you know, that's come from AI. There's certain mm-hmm. patterns within AI writing that Google can detect. So mm-hmm. do Google want the internet flooded with everyone's
of
AI?
Of course not.
No, they don't. You know, just Google are struggling already with the amount of websites, the bloggers and all of that kind of stuff. They don't need you piling in with 100 articles mm-hmm. a day with AI. That's what they don't want. So AI very quickly gets filtered out by Google. If you get, if you get away with it for a month or two, absolutely, you'll get traffic, but you will see yourself falling off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
So utilizing AI from purely an SEO content perspective is bad. Now, can you use AI and then humanly edit it and mm-hmm. tweak it and all that kind of stuff? Absolutely, you can do that, but you've got to change the patterns that are within AI. You know, AI starts with an introduction, it finishes with a conclusion. So even the AI writing tools out there, they're saying, do you want to exclude the conclusion?
Uh-huh.
Do you want to do this? So they're always trying to fight ways to throw off the detection, but Google hates it. You know, I've tried it. We built a website that had 1,000 pages on it and we got amazing growth. And then it came to an update and boom, dead.
Boom.
And you cannot get it back. You know,
wow.
Once you get slammed by Google, you basically get a black pen right through your name. You will struggle to recover. So even if you took all of that off, there's still a black mark through your name where Google are going, nah, you're wow. dodgy. So that's the danger. But can you use AI to create LinkedIn posts or anything else? Absolutely.
One thing that I use AI for is like brainstorming ideas really mm-hmm. quickly. And then I write everything myself, but kind of like just sometimes it is hard to come up with ideas.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest part of the creative process, to come up with ideas. And AI can give you loads of ideas,
yeah.
right? And then you can choose and transform and do whatever. I remember before AI was like really a thing, I was writing lyrics for a song.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I would not know what word I should pick to get at the end of the verse
yeah.
to rhyme or whatever. And I use like a website for rhyming and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then I would write what rhymes with this word. And I would find some words, but they weren't really a match. And then I would go to a random word generator, like get in front of loads of words and look at each and every word. And at some point, one word will stick out to me and say, oh, this is the word that I need.
Yeah.
Right. And it could create new ideas doing that. Sometimes just reading newspaper, random words that don't even make sense to you could like create some sort of like creative spark that could help you out to continue the flow. That's how I use AI at the moment.
Listen, I think AI is a very, very good thing. You know, like you say, for ideas, creative stuff, can you use it for social media posts? Absolutely. You know, you can tell it to write in a certain tone of voice as well and what you want.
Right.
The prompting that you put into AI.
You have your repository as well of knowledge. Yeah. You can use that.
But it's what you ask it to do. So if you just do a bland, give me a lyric, it will spit out some shit.
Whatever.
You have to be very, very specific with what you want.
That's
you
where
can
the secret
even
is.
Feed in information first, saying, check this, check that, check that. Now,
give me that,
and write it in this tone, this style. So the prompting part is the key part, and you can do a lot of different stuff with it. Lots of people are doing amazing things with it. So it's definitely here to stay. And I think anyone in any business, you know, using AI and automation is definitely, like we talked about earlier, you know, business struggle to grow and scale because of people's lack of delegation and everything, but AI and automation
could help.
Can help with a lot of that. You don't even need to have all the staff that you need now. You can actually automate a lot of stuff.
Yep, so that's true. What is your biggest SEO success to date? I'm sure there are many.
I've got some successful e-com stores. I've worked with some very, very successful companies over the years. Probably my own e-com store, to be fair. I started it in 2015, still going strong today. I'm not a fan of shoving numbers down people's throats because people go, what a prick.
So what is the website about? What is selling?
It sells, it's a digital download. It sells codes or serial numbers for whether it be Microsoft Office, it can be games, things like that. So it's more for PC gamers and stuff.
So there are licenses of software that you sell, basically. Yeah. That's smart.
And the reason that I'm in it is because of the failures I had. So, you know, I've done a lot of stuff.
Physical,
where the stock ran out, you know, trying to get the stock in time.
Such a pain.
Stock gets lost in the post. Shit gets broken in the post. You know, that's why I've got digital downloads is where I've ended up because of all the problems that I had in the past. So probably that particular website is the one that I'm most proud of because I built that from the ground.
What was the website? How's it called?
I'm not telling you.
No.
And the reason I don't, I never ever, and you won't find many SEO people will tell you what their website is because there's so many people out there that will start either blasting your website with negative stuff or they start reverse engineer what you're doing they give you a competitor. And a lot of people go, these fucking SEO guys are not sharing their website. You know, I've had a lot of hatred in the past. When you put yourself out there comes, you know, in comes a lot of hate as well. You know, when you do podcasts and you do YouTube, people just hate your guts. So see when you start...
People are finding more easier to like hate you than love you. It's but one of those things.
Then they know what's making you money and they're like, I'm going to fucking sabotage that. Bad reviews, bad this, bad that. Mm-hmm. You're like, motherfuckers. So
and the thing with the reviews and stuff, like you can't really appeal most of the stuff because like all the big companies like Google My Business, right? If you've got a restaurant and somebody had a bad experience, right? My mom has a restaurant in Crete. And she just got like some random reviews of one star. And it's a small restaurant. You know who came into the restaurant. And you can figure out that this is a fake review.
You probably had one bad person a week, like an awkward customer. So you'll know who it was.
Yeah, exactly. So you try to appeal that and Google does nothing.
Google's argument on that is they want what is seen as real, honest reviews on there.
Yeah.
But I've had it. I've seen a million other people going, Craig, I've fell out with a guy and I'm getting 10 bad reviews. They're clearly all from the same guy, same vocabulary, 10 different accounts. And Google don't do fuck all about it. You know,
well, that's bad because they take a monopoly on these reviews, right? So obviously, anywhere you go, you'll go and check Google reviews most of the time. There are a few others like Yelp, or Trustpilot. But let's say the restaurant business, right? They use exclusively Google because people like go on Google Maps, they find the restaurant and they see the reviews straight away. So this, if they don't do anything about the bad reviews, right? Then obviously this is really bad for the businesses.
Absolutely.
You could really like terminate one business with just paying loads of people to like slam that business with bad reviews and that's it.
Exactly. It's very, very common for that to happen. So, you know, we hear of that all the time. People come to us saying, Craig, I've been sabotaged here by someone. Is there anything
Is there a strategy that you can use to recover from that? Or
yeah. So you've got something called Google Local Guide. So when you give reviews or when you post photos to Google My Business or Google Business Profile, as it's now called, you get points for that and your local guide score will go up. So if you start to report that from powerful, trusted accounts, you will start to see some of these disappearing. Also, what Google done, I think it was maybe about a year ago, any Google accounts that are not really active, so if they've not been active for a prolonged period of time, they're killing the reviews and they're killing the accounts. I even got an email the other day saying, Craig, you've got a Gmail here that you've not logged into for 2 years. If you don't log in now, it's getting cut.
Yep.
So you'll see a lot of the crap reviews disappearing, especially the ones that someone set up a Gmail just to leave a review.
Right.
If I was to go in and leave, you know, your family a bad review, I'm active on Google all the time, so that's not going to disappear because they know I'm a real person, I'm trusted. So if I wanted to sabotage you, that is likely to stick. Mm-hmm. But it's the ones that have got the little eggshell head and they've only ever left one review. Those are quite easy to make disappear if you've got trusted accounts that say that's spam. So there are ways to try get around it to some degree, but not always. You know, there is always the odd one. You're like, this fucking motherfucker won't disappear. So yeah, that's the downside of Google reviews.
You mentioned mistakes. Like, tell me one little mistake you've done.
Mistakes in terms of businesses. So I am an impulsive guy. So you do SEO, you get the confidence that you can rank everything and anything. And you're like, fuck, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. So an idea springs to mind. One of them was women's clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And got the website made, started ranking it, then decided what clothes we're going to sell. So me and my wife are going through the wholesalers and stuff like that and bought all of this stuff. And I've told this story numerous times. People laugh at it. So she's picking bags and dresses and whatever else. It was like girls' party clothes or something it was called. Uh-huh. And I seen these white knee-high boots on the wholesaler. And I'm like, we need them. And my wife's like, what? They're disgusting. Like, no way. Like, and I'm like, fuck it, buy them. Now, these boots were the best-selling thing ever, by the way, on this website. But people were buying them. But the only problem we had was transvestites were buying them. So women's shoes are typically smaller than a guy. Uh-huh. If that makes sense.
Of course.
So guys would be trying to ram themselves into like this size 7 white boot, and they'd message back going, oh, they're not a real size 7, they're shit, I'm sending them back, you know, I went out dancing last night and they're all fucking cut my feet and all that. And you're like, dude, you can't send them back with blood in them and all that, like, what are you doing? And they're like, no, these are not a size 7. But anyway, so we had all of that and you're like, fuck. But also, by nature, I don't know, you know, what your wife or partner's like, but my wife will buy, if she sees something she likes, like let's say at a top, she'll buy 3 of them. Mm-hmm. Because when you buy something online, different brands have different fitting styles.
Yep.
You know, they're not all the same size. So we were getting like 50% returns, which eats into the profit.
Of course.
So
and it's the hassle of like...
The hassle of it. And you're just like, this is not going to work. So the search volume was there, the concept was there, but there was those little things where we're like, we can't legislate for guys trying to buy women's shoes. You know, they're just not made the same.
Yeah.
You know, guys were like, I want these in a size 14. You're like, women's wholesalers only make shoes up to a size 10, I believe, in most cases, or they did at the time. So we had a lot of problems like that, but the returns was the biggest thing that I never considered. And another one was the e-cigarette business. So years ago, that was just, you know, you're always looking for the latest hot thing to get into. E-cig, so again, impulsive, just jumped in, made the website, got it ranking. We even bought a kit how to make these the e-liquids and stuff. Then we decided we'll just use a drop shipper. We couldn't be fucked making it.
Yeah.
However, started ranking, doing everything else, started to get sales in, but the legal implications around that business, we couldn't do paid ads because it's nicotine.
Yeah.
PayPal were the only people to accept payments for it. So banks and stuff would not take payments for that particular product. And there was some other legal things that were going on. So I had dived into it without considering the full, business,
the full business
or the legal
idea.
Implications. Mm-hmm. So again, there's just things like that I've done. And I always put that down to, I get an idea. And the first thing I do is go and check for domain names, throw a fucking website up, and then start considering the business side of it.
Well, in a way, that's good. I mean, I tend to do that sometimes as well, just because, I mean, if you stay and you don't do, like if you're waiting for the perfect thing to happen or until you get the business plan together, and even with my business, the way I got into my business was just like, bang, just going. But sometimes it could stick, it could be good, and sometimes it's risky. It's good that you have that drive, you know what I mean? And from each and every mistake, if you can afford to make, right? to make them, right? Then you learn from them every time.
So. Yeah. I think, you know, in hindsight, I've had more failures than successes because of that. Now, obviously, I think very, very differently. And I don't, I'm not one of these guys that will sit and overthink, but I do
a bit of
thinking about things. And I think it's just trying to get that happy medium, because people like me will probably, you know, if I kept up the impulsive thing, would always be poor. You're always going to get more losers than winners. And there comes a time, you know, you make money, then you lose it all, then you make some more, and then you fucking lose it all, and you're like, I can't fucking keep doing this. This is not fun. Yeah, you just got to think wisely. And I think, you know, that's why I do masterminds, I speak at conferences and try and help people, because it's just trying to stop the next generation falling into the same shit that I've done. Like, it's taken me a while to figure things out in terms of SEO. Even, you know, I had to learn in forums. It took me probably 8 years to fully figure out what I was doing and actually have confidence to know that I can rank a website. You could do that in probably 6 months now, just with the material and
courses,
the right
and stuff,
coaching, and the, you know, someone taking all of the mistakes away. So, you know, it can be done a hell of a lot quicker, and that's what I try and emphasize to people. I don't like to talk about all the successes and look at me, I've got this and I've got that. You know, that's not for me. I try and say, look, I've got some fun stories, some shit that I've ended up in. Try and not do it. You know, there's always a meaning to what I'm trying to say, and you know, whether that's being impulsive, not delegating. You know, I've had an agency, and it's dissolved, and it was because, you know, I had too many staff, I had the ego and stuff like that, and I wasn't delegating properly, and basically I was literally paying out what was coming in, and you know, I couldn't afford to pay the tax man, the VAT bill and stuff, so, you know, I wasn't really thinking about profitability. It was all just, you know, turnover and staff, and, you know, again, I always put that back to the old ego. And, you know, was I doing that to say to my mates down the pub, you know, I've got fucking 25 staff or whatever it was? Like, who was I kidding? You know, no one cares how many staff you've got.
No.
It does not matter what you do. It's the systems, the processes,
of course,
and how much money's in your back pocket. If you can afford to go on holiday with your family or do nice things or invest in things like this, you know, absolutely. That's what success is for me. And as I say, I was foolishly, I don't know why, but I went down the old ego route and had a lot of failures. So,
hey, failures are a learning curve.
Before we dive back into the episode, I want to give a quick shout out to SaaSPod. Not only are they the masterminds behind this podcast, but they also power dozens of other shows you know and love. SaaSPod offers a flexible pay-as-you-go podcast production service that grows with you. Whether you need help choosing the right equipment, booking guests, editing, or setting up your podcast, they've got you covered. The best part? The team at SaaSPod isn't just professional. They make the entire process fun and stress-free. If you've been sitting on a great podcast idea, now is the time to bring it to life. Visit SaaSPod.com and use the code TPF2025 to get 20% off your first production package. That's TPF2025 for 20% off. All right, let's get back into the episode.
What's your take on podcasting, and how can podcasting influence SEO?
I think podcasting is a great way to demonstrate your knowledge, expertise, and everything else. I think, you know, from an SEO perspective, does podcasting actually do anything for your SEO? You could maybe argue that when you distribute a podcast, you're getting links from
Apple and
all of the, you know, the different platforms that you're distributing to. Can you chop that up and use it in social media to drive traffic to your website? Absolutely. Does that help your SEO? Yes. So engagement on your website is a signal that you
right.
know,
so
traffic.
If I get traffic to my website, right, even though it comes from different sources, Google likes that, correct?
Absolutely. So, you know, whether your traffic comes from Facebook, whether it comes from an email list, whether it comes from paid ads, that is...
That's really good, because there is a way to hack into it, right? You can pay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You can pay. Obviously, you get the traffic, but then the organic growth, I would say, it's a byproduct of it as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you have to be doing everything. So let's say I'm stuck in position 5 for Podcast Studio Glasgow. You know, do I need to do anything with the content? Do I need to build more backlinks? More often than not, it's not about that. You will have matched like for like with the competition. The people that are in the top five are normally up there because of the engagement that they're getting. So on obviously the guy in position one is getting the most traffic because of the position he's in. Now, he's either been there for a hell of a long time. Mm-hmm. I've had so many people come to me, dude, going, how's that piece of shit website number one? That's a terrible looking website. Mm-hmm. Like, it gets all the traffic. It's been there for 20 years. Google ain't shifting it because it trusts it. It does mm-hmm. what...
Is not a human. It is literally crawling into your website. Like bots are crawling your website for content. It doesn't matter. I mean, it matters how your website looks and functions and the speed as well. But the robot doesn't really look at the color of your website or something like that.
Stuff like that, you know, is all stuff you could argue back and forth all day about. But does Google look at your analytics and say, this website serves the purpose that, you know, for someone looking for a podcast mm-hmm. studio in Glasgow? Absolutely. So we're going to keep showing that guy.
Of course.
And that is where you need to manipulate the traffic that goes to your website. So you need to use social media. You need to use anything you can to nudge that guy off the top slot. And we call that click-through rate manipulation. And a lot of people will not tell you that's what they're doing, but you have to be driving traffic from multiple sources. Mm-hmm. Google are going to go, this is a real brand. This is a real guy who's trying this, and this. That is what Google wants to put in position one. And if you're failing on that side, you're not going to be position one. If someone else is doing it, then
that's really good.
Lines.
That's good. It's good. It's more of a holistic approach to it.
A lot of people don't realize, like, over the years, there's been a lot of affiliate websites and stuff like that where it's just been a shitty little blog that, you know, links to Amazon products and everything else. A lot of that's been killed off mm-hmm. because it has no brand search. It doesn't have any social media channels. Mm. It doesn't get traffic coming from other sources. And when people hit the website, they click on an Amazon link and they go straight to Amazon. So all of the signals that Google now want from a real business are not there. You know, it's not get socials, it's not get anything else. So you do, if you want to survive online, you need to build a real business, you know, holistically.
Yeah, the entire marketing strategy needs to be there. Ads, social media,
YouTube,
podcasting, have everything and make sure that you get people to your website through multiple sources.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's good.
So, and you know, people say, oh, but I'm not happy going to podcast, I'm shy or whatever. Get someone in your company to do it. You know, it's very easy to go on podcasts. Mm-hmm. You know, that everyone's looking for guests. If you've got some value to offer, then
go for it.
And do it. If you don't, the way I see it, if you don't put your face out there, someone else will, and they're taking the money. So
of course,
that's, you know, even maybe for yourself, you're probably sitting going, should I do a podcast? Should I not? And you go, fuck it, I have to. You know, I've not really
got
an option.
This is exactly what I did. Obviously, I produce podcasts for other people. And I said, man, we're producing podcasts, but I don't have a podcast of my own. So I definitely want to start this. First thing first, showcasing my expertise, my guest knowledge as well. You position yourself into the space as an expert. So there's so many benefits from running a podcast. And obviously, it keeps you accountable. It's also a networking tool as well.
Yeah,
there's so many, many things that you can get out of the podcast, which is...
Absolutely. Cool. Like, even for here today, I've met you for the first time. Will I be able to tell people that there's a nice podcast studio mm-hmm. here? Or do I get people come to me going, I need someone to edit my podcast or produce my podcast or whatever it may be? Absolutely. So you just never know. Every individual you meet, you might not think, they might not bring value now. Could be in 6 months, it could be in 2 years, where you've actually sat and had a conversation with that person. You're like, nah, like, I can see what you're doing here. I respect it. And you know, people always deal with people that they've met. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a crappy email or whatever, you don't have that kind of personal connection. And say, I think, you know, even just from a networking perspective and stuff like that, and people actually coming here and sitting going, ah, this guy's worked hard, you know, and you won't mind telling people about it. So again, maybe you're out your comfort zone, but that's a great thing.
Yeah.
And I would advise anyone, if anyone thinks I'm comfortable speaking at a conference or sitting on YouTube.
And it's a learning curve. Obviously, you start a podcast, you may be not a great host or whatever, but you force yourself, you put yourself into, you know, outside the box, and you evolve some skills that you never thought about actually you know, developing, like speaking, staying in front of a camera, using a microphone, you know, all that stuff. It's really important for a business owner because you talk to people every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That, there's a lot of skills there. And believe it or not, people actually come to me for tips on public speaking. And if I was to tell you that when I first ever done my public speaking gig, I was drenched in sweat,
yep,
dry mouth, literally close to shit in my pants. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you become. And then people are going, man, you're really confident on stage and stuff. Can you teach me how to do that? And you're like, there's not much I can give you some direction, but you've just got to do it and do it and do it and analyze it.
It's experience, yeah, and it's a feel. I've been in the music industry for quite some time, and I played on quite some big stages, especially in Romania, in my country. And every time I would go on stage, I would get nervous. There would be, you know, so many eyes looking at me, and singing in front of them or playing keys or whatever, you get very nervous. And one of the things that I found that breaks it is, first thing first, don't think about it too much before.
Yeah.
Just go there and be the best version of yourself. The more you think about it, the more you analyze it right before you get on stage, the crazier is gonna be for you. And you may lose yourself for whatever. And if you lose yourself, it doesn't matter. Just be yourself. You know, people like authentic people.
Well,
right?
That's it. You know, but if you make a, if every human being makes a mistake, you know, even Taylor Swift, I'm sure, you know, goes on a stage and fucks, you know, something up or doesn't start the song right or whatever. But what's the worst thing that can happen? And people overthink it massively. What if
you
what
get
if,
viral? What if? Everybody, more people know about you now.
But more people like me on stage because I'm authentic. I swear, I wear shorts and a t-shirt. They're like, at first I'm like, people are like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, tattoos, swearing, shorts and a t-shirt. And then I'm like, no, he's all right. You know, I hope that's what they think anyway. I've got still some people that say he's a prick, but authenticity is a big, big thing. And, you know, just being yourself. I've been fortunate where I've not had to, I've just been honest, telling my story, and it's never really gone far wrong. So you just got to, again, put yourself out there. And I remember looking at people on a stage before at conferences and stuff that I was attending. I'm like, that guy's talking shit. Like, I could do better than that. I'm more experienced than that guy. Mm-hmm. Like, but you've seen everyone swamping to him, like giving him money and, you know, for
the courage
whatever.
To get together.
So. And you're like, fuck, you know, and that's where I went, fuck it, you know.
I'll do it.
I'm going to do it. I'm sitting here, no one's coming to me and everyone's throwing money at this guy. So we need to somehow switch this around.
Awesome, Craig. So let's play a game.
Let's
do it. Basically, I've got there a few questions. They're not really related to any business questions necessarily. Or they're just random questions. I want you to pick, let's do just two because we run out of time a little bit. So
one,
pick one and two.
Two. Open them?
Yeah.
If you could instantly master one skill unrelated to your career, what would it be? God, I would have loved to have been a professional footballer, but I'm too old for that now, so I'm not going to use that. Always had dreams of playing for Barcelona and stuff, but was never quite good enough. But one skill that I could master, what would it be? Probably business law.
Business law. Oh, okay.
I think that's a very interesting topic, you know, just from people I've spoken to in the past or across the years, you know, I find it, you know, very intriguing as to what the actual law is and, you know, the grey areas and stuff like that. Not that I'm trying to do anything illegal, but, you know, I think a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions of what the law is and what you can and can't do and stuff like that. So I would have loved to have mastered that, and I think you could make a fortune from it as well. Mm-hmm. So, because everyone's naive when it comes to the actual law.
Yeah, so, even like, for example, tax and stuff, like people are doing certain things and they end up losing money to the tax man because they don't have the right structure or everything in place properly. Like, so it's really valuable you as somebody that can provide that to a business.
Yeah.
You save them a lot of money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Jesus.
What is it?
What is the strangest thing you've ever Googled? Oh, man. I mean, I, over the years, have been involved in some weird, weird industries for people. So I'll tell you a funny story. I was on two consultancy calls back to back, and I was at home, and the first one was like some plumber in London or whatever it was going to be. So my wife's walking back and forth in the background, and she heard me going, oh, this plumbing thing and all that kind of stuff. And the next guy had a swingers website on the consultancy call, and we're talking about swingers and all the search terms around about that. And the wife just like stopped at the door and like looked in. And then she said to me after, like, how the fuck did you go from talking about plumbers to swingers?
Yeah.
But in you know, in years gone by, I have worked with people who provide tantric massage. Don't know if you know what that is. You could Google it. Anal massage.
Yep.
I have had people in the foot fetish industry. I've worked in the adult niche, you know, for a lot of different things.
We've got two clients on that as well. In the US, we produce one podcast called Holy Randall podcast. You should Google that.
These are the bizarre ones. So I remember once we were doing it for a woman who was a dominatrix in Glasgow. And there was just certain terms on her website where we're like, what is that? So there was one. So she done everything. She would stand in your balls with high heels on. Yeah. She would, you know, torture you. She would whip you. But there was something called queening.
Queening.
And oh, we're right. Like, in the office, we're like, what the fuck is queening? which I might be wrong because this was a long time ago, but I'm pretty sure it's when the woman stuffs your face in her armpits and shit like that. It was something like that anyway. And we're like, fucking hell. So there was a lot of stuff like on her website where we're like, I've never even heard of this. Like, I didn't even know this was a thing. So that type of stuff is certainly stuff that I've Googled, and we get a lot of bizarre inquiries and niches to look at. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of consultancy calls, and most I've had hemorrhoids. People have been selling hemorrhoid stuff. Anal bleaching cream. Like, dude, some of the stuff is just outrageous. So from fetish to porn to hemorrhoids.
Quite a few strange things you Googled for your job.
So if anyone's ever to see my browsing history,
crazy
I'm
stuff.
Just doing research, mate.
Yeah,
so.
Research. So we're getting back into some of the business stuff. So one of the challenges I found is when you try to brainstorm content, when you try to come up with ideas for content. And obviously you have so many formats you have to take care of. Like, you have the social media, you've got YouTube, you've got podcasting, you've got blogs, whatever. You have so many things. How do you manage all that to make sure that it goes out on time? Or, you know, you've got a team, of course.
Yeah.
But maybe you can give us like what's your strategy there? In that question also, maybe tell us like your YouTube experience as well. How did you actually manage to grow the YouTube channel? Because you started that in COVID, I remember, from what I've seen on your website.
Yeah.
That's not a long time actually to get 1 million.
No. So I'll tell you that as well. Yeah. So with the strategy, if I'm doing an educational video, so I will record the video over the shoulder, you know, screen recording, and I'll tell you how to do this, do that, whatever it may be. From there, what I would typically do is there's an AI writer called Koala Writer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will get that to transcribe the video into a blog post.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then humanly edit it and tweak it and all that kind of stuff. Now, that then gets added to the back end of the website, ready to go. And then the video that you make can obviously be chopped up into shorts. I use something called Opus Clip, where there's lots of different variations of that tool, but again, that would go out in social media and stuff like that as well. So whilst you create one piece of content, it can cover everything that you need. It can it be turned into a blog post? Can it be turned into some social media shorts, luring people over to YouTube? And obviously the video finally goes on to YouTube. And again, YouTube's a search engine. People will search for stuff in YouTube. So it's really important that you rank well for your search terms on YouTube. So that is also really, really important, you know. And that goes on to the next question, you know, how did you grow on YouTube? So I had YouTube since about 2016, but it was just here and there, you know, just a couple of shitty videos. COVID came, couldn't speak at conferences, and I was bored. You know, I was just literally bored and started cranking out videos, doing question and answer sessions with some friends. I also gave away a free course in COVID that 50,000 people signed up for overnight.
Wow.
And that brought me a lot of YouTube followers, so it kind of blew up in that way.
So what was the course on YouTube?
No, it was on SEO, so I gave away a free...
No, but the course, where did you host it?
The course was on YouTube.
On YouTube.
So basically what I was doing is I had it... The course was also on another platform as well. Now, I was trying to force people over to the YouTube, so I was giving the majority of it away and then saying, come here and ask questions and do all of that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to force
people
over to the YouTube. I also put a lot, so I sold a lot of courses previously to that. So I put a lot of my older courses on Udemy. Now, scary the amount of traffic and people and subscribers you get in Udemy. So I put them up for the lowest price I could on Udemy. Again, it was just all about brand awareness, exposure, and trying to get them over to YouTube to get the new stuff, because I didn't see it was the
I like that approach.
There's a lot of stuff there. I've done a lot of paid ads as well. But I was already relatively well known across social media. I'd spoken at conferences for many years.
You started getting like the followers to subscribe you there, and that started to create an effect.
So it just kind of blew. I think during COVID also got my first ever YouTube channel sponsor, because people are seeing it blown up and they're like, fuck, you know. So, you know, YouTube doesn't make a lot of money in terms of AdSense. You know, the revenue's it's not great.
Negligible,
So people often say, why do you put so much time and effort into YouTube? And the sponsorship deals, the brand deals that you get from that is insane. So again, utilizing the sponsors, doing more paid ads, I was able to then do YouTube ads on other SEO influencers' channels. So there's a lot of wee tricks in there as well, you know, including the Udemy, giving away the free course. And people are going, you're crazy giving away the free course. You're like, really? You know, and that's where I think a lot of people think short term, how can I get 10 bucks tomorrow? You know, whereas through COVID, I'm like, I want to grow this personal brand, like, insanely well on YouTube, because we didn't know when we were going to get that next out to a conference, because all conferences were cancelled, and you know, I was enjoying doing that, and you know, it was getting me the exposure I needed. But when that stops, you know,
boom,
you're like, fuck, what, you know, what we do next? So that's where YouTube came. And obviously 5 years later nearly, you know, it's done well. But you know, it's all about consistency and stuff as well, because you know, when you do it, even for the first 6 months, you know, it wasn't blown that well. So it took a bit of time to go, but once it goes, it goes. That's the thing. And a lot of people go, oh, you're wasting
your time.
It starts
to have a compounding effect. So like, the more subscribers you have, the more you get shown, and it's quite rolling.
That's the thing, you know, and to rank well in YouTube, even if you were to Google something just now, like Black Friday SEO deals, there's four videos that show on page one of Google. Two of them are mine. So ranking well in Google for search terms that people use, because YouTube's probably the second biggest search engine out there. People are on there.
There's
looking
more people.
For stuff.
There's more people with your name, Craig Campbell, in this world. So I actually typed your name on YouTube, and the next thing that I got suggested was SEO.
Yeah,
which is
Got to work at that, because I've also got the same name as there's an American singer. And there's a Canadian comedian, or vice versa. It's either a Canadian singer and an American comedian. It's one or the other. So when you Google Craig Campbell, these guys are far, because I'm in a very small niche. You know, they're far more well-known than me.
Yeah.
So I've also been working hard to make sure that I am the one that gets auto-suggested on YouTube or on Google and stuff like that as well. So I've had to work hard at that. And it's not perfect yet, because if you just Google Craig Campbell, the singer still comes up, you know, his knowledge panel and stuff comes up, and you're just like, fucking, I should have changed my name.
You know? I trademarked my surname in Europe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, because I've got like a weird situation. I had a website called bratis.co.uk, and I had my own music in there. And then at some point on Spotify, I will go on Spotify, I will look for my name, and another guy will pop up, and my music will not be listened to because of that. And I said, like, what is one way I could take ownership of this name? First thing first, is my own name.
Yeah,
I wear this name, and it's a surname. And this guy was using Bratis because he was from Bratislava, from Slovakia. So I was like, to be honest, I have more ownership of this name than he has, because that's my name. And then at the same time, I was saying, I was using this name for years and years, and this guy just came in, right? So that's not good. So then what I did, first thing, I went to the European Union Trademark Association, how's it called? EWIPO, I think it's called. And then I bought Bratis as a trademark into the niche, music niche, 41 class or something. And then literally I emailed this guy, said like, now this is my name, you can't use this anymore. And he had to take it down.
Bloody hell.
And yeah, that happened on a New Year's Eve as well for him.
That's not good. But you've got to do it. You've got to do it. Yeah. You know, a lot of people do the flip side of that. So a lot of brands out there build a brand and they don't even own their own domain. So a lot of people like me could do brand jacking, we would call that, and you could make money off of that. You know, like if it's a hotel chain
you
or something.
You could have, for example, you could have one name, you could have the same name in two different classes, niches, and they, if they don't collide, if they don't go to the same product, the same idea of a business, then it's fine.
Yeah.
You can't actually legal attack it anyway, in any way. But let's say we've got like two businesses that are called Apple and they are into technology, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
Right. So,
well, I had a problem with Apple, believe it or not. So I submitted to get some of my stuff trademarked, and my logo on my website, it's a little cartoon guy that's sitting in front of a laptop.
Oh, yeah.
It used to have the Apple logo on it, and
Apple
chased my ass.
Really?
And that Apple logo was on all of the openers to my YouTube. So I took it off the website and I took it off of everything else.
Especially if you embedded that into the video itself, that would be a problem, because you need to re-upload. And
So we had to clip the introduction to the videos away, because Apple were like, get it off there. Introduction to the video, and we had like hundreds of videos, and had to get it off, because once the lawyer's on you, you've got to basically get rid of it. And I'm like, dude, I'm not trying to kid on an Apple, fuck's sake, it's free
and
advertising.
It's a freaking small Apple logo on my logo. I mean, it's like,
it's, you know, free advertising for them. Like, I'm not selling laptops, I'm not doing anything, but they're like, get it down. And
I'm using Apple products, like any other.
And I'm a big Apple fan. I've got the phone, I've got the laptop, I've got the earphones, fuck me. But yeah, once they were on, they were not letting go.
And amazing.
There's nothing you can do. And my video editor person who does all the uploading to YouTube, she had to sit and go through and clip, and you're like, fuck. Because I wasn't prepared to take the videos down. I'm like, I've worked too hard at this YouTube for you just to come along and take them down. So we had to clip the front of that off on a lot of the older videos. So lesson learned though.
Yeah. Hey there, it's me from the future, and I just reviewed Craig's podcast, ready to be released, and I just wanted to add this quick message. Craig is an amazing guy. He provided us a lot of information, but we touched on a little subject right there in the podcast, and that is law, legislation and all that, which is quite interesting. It's an interesting topic, and the next episode next week is going to be exactly about that with Adam Morgan. It is an insightful episode. We talk about legislation, law, policies in the content creation space. So we are focusing more on that. We're going to talk about business as well. And it's really, really, really educational. So don't forget to join next week on the Podfiles. It's going to be great, I promise you. Great. So where can people find you if they want to work with you, or they want to invite you to an event, or?
CraigCampbellSEO.com is the website. You can find all my socials on there. You can reach out on Instagram or watch me on YouTube or, yeah, I'm not that hard to find. So you can just Google Craig Campbell SEO and reach out if I can help you in any way or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say it's quite easy to find because the way I found him was quite funny. I Googled like for marketing experts around Glasgow to invite on the podcast, and then your name popped up. And then I went on your website. I wanted to message you on the website to give you an email there. And then my marketing manager, I was on a Zoom call with him and said, oh, this guy is live right now on Facebook. Like, go and ask him to come to the show. And I said, oh, let's do that. And I actually did. And he actually responded positively to that. So we got this podcast recorded. So thank you, Craig, for coming to the show.
No worries.
I think it was a great episode and we got loads of bits and bobs from SEO, business, all sorts of things. So thank you so much for coming. You guys, you can go and follow the Podfiles on YouTube as well as, you know, whatever you listen to your podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, whatever. Don't forget to tune in into the next episode. Thank you so much for joining. Goodbye.
Cheers.